coming down from Mount Olympus, the Gilded Boy, Josh Romney. Is he going to be our new governor? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
How do you change the conversation about a homeless shelter where everybody's complaining they don't want it? You volunteer and you say, I'll take it. Troy Walker's a hero. It's Representative McKay on the right.
Jenny Wilson considering a run against Senator Hatch? I love it. This is both sides of the aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is both sides of the aisle. I represent the political center. On the political right, joined in the studio by the co-host, Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
And our other co-host on the political left, sitting in a throne today, Jim DeBacchus.
Hello from the throne room.
We are teasing Jim because, for some reason, KCPW has this big, beautiful chair for the Democrat, and the two Republicans get these little scrawny things.
Well, we believe in big public radio.
It's pledge week at KCPW, and we want to encourage our listeners to call, support KCPW, and support both sides of the aisle. The number's 801-359-5279. Or, Dan, I'll bet you'd prefer, if you were doing this, to go to the website at kcpw.org. Make your pledges.
That's how I give all my money.
So let's give people a lively program to be worth those pledges.
Ross,
what do you think?
Venmo? Do they take Venmo yet? I mean, that's where
the
transaction
radio
of money
like,
these days is Venmo. So, you know, let's get some Venmo dollars.
You know what? If you don't like Trump as much as I don't like Trump, he's cutting the budget around here and all public. Now you got to dig down, especially if you're one of those big little government people that get the government out. Well, put your Venmo where your mouth is and come in.
A thousand points of light.
Cutting their budget. Exactly.
A thousand points of light for public radio.
Jim, I think we're going to cut your salary, actually.
All right.
Again?
This is specifically
Jim and
aimed
Dan,
at you.
We have got to give our listeners a great show today. So let's talk about some of the local political news, of which there is a lot. Josh Romney, considering a run for governor in 2020. Dan, you mentioned a very clever tweet to me by our lieutenant governor. Describe that for our listeners.
Yeah, so everyone knows Spencer Cox is the lieutenant governor of the state, and Jim is a fan of Spencer's, and so am I. I think Spencer's done a great job. And, you know, Good Morning America reached out and asked Ann Romney about, you know, her son potentially running for governor. And Spencer Cox's retort on social media was something to the effect of, my mom is a little bummed that she didn't get asked whether or not, you know, I was considering anything.
Nobody asked my mom.
Yeah, nobody asked my mom type of deal, which was pretty funny.
It's got to be kind of tricky for Lieutenant Governor Cox because he's making such a sacrifice to be in public service. I just say that because he left a very prominent and high-paying job.
He has a three-hour commute
or whatever it is. He's given it his heart and soul all to, you know, render service to the state, and a natural that he would want to be in that top seat. Josh Romney is a wonderful guy, has a big family, working hard, but he's not in public service.
Yeah.
So, Jim, what's your make on this?
Well, who is Josh Romney? Who are we to go, oh, yes, you want it, you got it, because your daddy? Hello? What has he ever done? One thing for the state of Utah, one bill. One moment at the legislature. Give me a break. He ought to be excoriated for even being mentioned because his daddy's rich. It is a terrible thing that the monarchy of the governorship ought to be handed to somebody who knows nothing. What could go wrong with a guy with millions and millions of dollars who's never been around government marching in to control things? I hate this. You want to serve? You go get your precious little protected family buns elected to a city council or to a legislature or to something, and you pay your dues.
You don't get it because of daddy. Like to see a progression.
I don't like that.
Yeah. What was your progression, Jim? What was your progression to be a state senator?
State party chair.
I did that three years.
And a community organizer, and that was kind of his thing as well.
You got to run for president with that.
Okay.
What was your progression, Dan, into public service?
This kills me.
Yeah, I don't really have.
Well, you were a student body officer, I think.
Sure. I mean, I did student body officer stuff. I mean, I'm trying to think.
But you were devoted to politics. You worked for candidates. You were on the staff.
I was a delegate.
So how is Josh Romney not devoted to politics? I mean, his family's his dad was a governor.
He worked on a national campaign.
Worked on a national campaign for his father.
Daddy. You know, give me something he's done for Utah.
But I will tell you this. Josh is a very qualified person.
Yeah.
He is. If you don't know him yet, I'm hopeful
you'll
that
like what you see when he decides to run.
If he wins, that kind of thing, I think you will like what you see because Josh is a very thoughtful person.
I'm sure he's thoughtful.
And I'm glad.
But
I'm glad, by the way,
governor.
I'm glad, by the way, that Jim said, "Where's his one bill?" Right? Because that's exactly how many bills Spencer Cox passed while he was in the legislature. Right?
Yeah,
was one bill. So I'm glad Jim made it clear you have to have at least one bill. So that's good.
Let's just stay.
Because how many bills does Jim have to be governor?
Let's stay
that was not nice.
In the Romney world for just a bit longer because it's been really interesting watching Senator Hatch sort of lay the groundwork for an exit strategy for himself if Mitt Romney wants his seat. And I'll be the first to say that there's lots of whisperings that Governor Romney would be interested in that job, but more importantly, that the people in the United States Senate, like Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, want to get some more senior adults in the room in the U.S. Senate. I could get really excited about Mitt Romney serving as a Utah state senator or a U.S. senator for the Utah.
Well, so Mitt's in his 60s?
Late 60s?
Late 60s, right?
I'm just guessing,
right?
No idea.
So that gives him, you know, three terms, likely, like from a age perspective.
Four if he goes Hatch.
I mean, and four,
But think how incredible both his, you know, business experience, his public service, being on a national campaign, I know he's had some things that have suggested otherwise, but he is a political moderate, speaking from the middle.
Sure.
So I would get really excited about that, Jim.
You know what? The Mitt Romney is a different case.
Is he, because you feel because like he's had the progression.
He earned his way up. He's got the bona fides. And Hatch, give me a break. Of course he's saying that, because if Romney gets in, he's going to get beat anyway, so he might as well make it magnanimous, and I think that's what the deal is.
Jim, just to do one more on the Josh, I mean, I'm just happy that high-quality people are willing to put their name on the ballot and seek office. So if we had Governor Romney running for the U.S. Senate, if we had a Josh Romney running for governor, Spencer Cox, the more the merrier, we even have Jenny Wilson basically announcing that she's formed an exploratory committee to run against Hatch in 2018. So there's someone
stepping
up in a big way.
You want a list of people that are qualified, that have responsibilities, that are Utahns, that have legislative experience, that have paid their dues? I'll give them to you. Lots of Republicans that would be terrific that would be there. I don't like this. This is the crown prince because your daddy is big. We're going to put this little crown on your head. What has the guy ever done for Utah? Give me one thing other than build his fortune here, and I'm not seeing it.
Well, he'd have to make his case, no doubt about it. But it is so we've had three.
But that's going to be a big race, Natalie.
Yeah, because we've had three gubernatorial elections that have not been a lot of fireworks, right?
Yeah, you've got you know, 12 years of pent-up demand for people that are hyper-interested in being the
more
guy
the merrier.
In Utah, right?
The more the merrier.
So there'll be
there's no doubt, Greg Hughes has got to be looking at it. Mm-hmm. Spencer Cox, you've got
Derek Miller is looking at everything.
Oh, there's another golden boy, Derek Miller.
And then you've got
now, how are you a golden boy? Both his parents are professors at BYU. I mean, he's just someone who's gotten an education and lent service.
He's taken by the elites and given this thing. What does he run? It's like a socialist thing, or I don't even understand what this.
Okay.
I mean, the governor's taking care of him.
He
ran economic development in
the
state.
Five employees.
He ran economic development in the state, more or less.
All right.
He was a chief of staff to a governor.
All right. He's
and
got.
Then he has been running the World Trade Center, Utah, and they've had great outcomes in terms of exports and spreading globalization to rural Utah. These
there
are good
go.
Things.
Okay. No, those are good things, and that's different than Josh Romney, too.
Oh, brother. Can you imagine a race, though, where you have two members of the same family basically within the top two spots on an election? Because you got the U.S. Senate race, and then right after that I think is the governor's race on the ballot. I can't remember how that kind of falls in, but they're right there 1-2 as far as the office ballots.
Yeah.
And so you got the two members of the same family, same last name on the deal. People can just check Romney and move on.
Do you think Mitt Romney could win?
I'm thinking about changing my name to Romney. I got to be honest.
Is it confusing?
McKay's not bad. It's just spelled wrong the way you have it.
It's really, I get that.
Could Mitt Romney win as a Democrat in Utah for governor or the Senate?
Why would he want to? Hey,
he likes his soul.
We've got lots to talk about in our next segment. We're going to talk about Draper City. We'll go into Washington, D.C. But before we do it, remember the pledge drive, 801-359-5279 or kcbw.org. Stay tuned.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Homeless shelters, guys. We're still not done talking about it. Big news this week as Draper City stepped forward and actually volunteered two new sites for Salt Lake County to look at. What is the backstory here? I don't know whether to look at Dan or Jim, but there's got to be, I mean, everybody's been running away from these sites like they're the plague, and then you've got a very suburban community as far away as you can get in Salt Lake County from the existing site saying, mm-hmm. we're in.
Yeah.
What's going on, Dan?
Well,
you're in the area. You don't represent Draper, but you're in the area.
So I think it is interesting. I was talking to my wife about this just the morning of the announcement from Draper City.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife says, why don't we in Riverton, or why don't we, you know, and she could have said Draper anywhere mm-hmm. else. Why don't we in the south part of the county, why don't we step up?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's always looking for opportunities to serve and to do things for people and to make things happen. Why don't we step up? And I'd been, you know, kind of ruminating on that. And then, bam, Draper steps up and says, hey, we're going to do something. I think both of those sites that they're offering are going to be difficult still
mm-hmm.
because they aren't connected to public transportation very well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been one of the siting criteria that they've looked at for some of the other sites mm-hmm. is public transportation. But I love the way it's changing the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Because you listen to everybody else has been saying
we got to serve these people and we got to find – this is a burden we all share.
Yeah, it's totally flipped the narrative from
this is
NIMBYism, right? Which, you know, for those of you who don't deal in land use type of stuff, NIMBY just means not in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you generally want to build your house and then slam the door behind you so that nobody else builds around you so you've got all the open space. And that kind of element is the same thing with we want to solve homelessness, but we want you to deal with the burden of dealing with homelessness.
Yeah.
We're willing to bear the cost. And that's, to me, this is classic NIMBYism, all the other arguments. And the mayor of Draper, Troy Walker, my hat's off to him. And I'm not sure Greg Hughes had something to do with it because they're good friends. I wouldn't be surprised they had some conversation. But I will say this, my hat's off for changing the conversation.
Yeah, real interesting. Jim, do you have any insights you want to share on this?
I'd like to know what Josh Romney's going to do about it, but I'm going to let that go. I don't even know who the mayor of Draper is, and I don't know if the mayor was responsible, but I am proud to be in the valley with leaders like that in the community that came out of nowhere and are saying mine, and who knows, they could get them in trouble with the people in their community. We need more of that.
Yeah.
Amen.
Interesting. Well, we're going to find out soon if Mayor McAdams holds to his commitment, and it looks like the state's holding his feet to the fire. Guys, let's talk about some of the bills that have been signed or vetoed. HB 11, this is the bill that would have required – well, it would have removed partisan appointment requirements from numerous state boards and commissions. Jim, when you heard this news, you had to smile ear to ear. Did the governor listen to you?
No, I doubt that. I think ultimately this just became a tit for tat here, that he had so offended. I mean, if you look at the Tribune poll, non-LDS people in the state were outraged. And LDS people were loving the whole alcohol, non-alcohol. And I think this is just a bone thrown
back
over there. Because Mike Maurer, this is the governor's bill. He came up with this bill. It was his baby. He wanted it. It was a priority.
And then he vetoed it.
And it wasn't his idea. Yes, that's what happened. And I can't find any explanation. So,
Dan, any chance of a veto override on this one? Or is it just not that big of a deal?
It's not that big a deal. And I haven't heard any other, you know, we're obviously taping this the day before tomorrow, but today is the last day to sign bills.
Uh-huh.
I haven't heard any other vetoes.
I'm really liked what the Salt Lake Tribune said about this bill veto. And it basically just said, hey, the governor vetoed it. Who knew? Why would he veto something that would have helped Republicans? And in the end, the Tribune said it's time for people to stand up and be available to serve on these boards and commissions if you're Democrats. We need more people to be available.
Time for good people to stand up.
Something like that. That's how I read it. Guys, let's go.
Or sit down in thrones. Either one.
Get off the throne.
we should remind people that it's...
What about Josh Romney? He should apply to some of those boards and committees.
We should remind people that it's pledge drive. Jim, do you want to do a pledge drive reminder?
I do. You know what? You're either action or you're laying around there. These people need money. President Trump is cutting them. And he's cutting the whole thing by 10%, which means we are 30-minute show is going to be down to 26 minutes when you include the commercials. So just get over
that's
to the phone.
Be a selling point, Jim.
801-359-5279, or just go visit kcpw.org. We need to talk about the Republican health care bill going down. And last week on this program, I predicted that Paul Ryan was a clever guy and he'd figure it out and he would prevail.
Remember what I said?
You got it right.
It was going down.
It was going down. It went down. Dan, the bill had problems, and in that sense, it's good it went down. But when I hear Speaker Ryan saying, you know, we have to learn how to, instead of being the party of opposition, be the party of governing, it really disappoints me that the Republican Party could say repeal and replace for all those years and not have something ready to go.
You know, can I just tell you what I think the big killer was?
Yeah, I think our listeners would love to hear it.
So this is a little wonky, not too much, but okay. I'll try and keep it on the up and up. So Medicaid match rates, the traditional Medicaid match rates is 70% to 30% at the state level. Mm-hmm. So those are the traditional Medicaid match rates. So
states put up $30, feds put up $70 kind of thing?
Yep, that's exactly right. Okay. So that's that. If you divide it into hundreds, that's exactly how it works. So in the Medicaid expansion world, there was a proposal to take and put that reimbursement rate back down to 70-30 from what the Obamacare Medicaid expansion would have had at 90-10. And so
it transferred all this.
All these states who had expanded were now going to have a massive hole in their budget.
Uh-huh.
And that's how he lost
the
moderates.
Took it off of the federal government's shoulders and put it on the state shoulders.
That's right.
And the governors.
That's how he lost the moderates, because the moderate states, the purplish.
A lot of them are former governors.
They get the hole in the budget. So that was one big problem. And then the other problem was the bill was more than one page, more than one sentence. And because it was more than one sentence, more nuanced than that, and not just a straight repeal all, you lost the far right.
Yeah.
And so because you lost those two groups, that was my thing. I knew the bill was dead because you couldn't get them back.
Jim, I want to hear your comments, but as I turn it over
Wait,
to you.
But let me just one more thing wonky real quick.
Okay.
The problem is, it is the same thing I had that Utah was complaining about with Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. It is. And everyone knows at the federal government level. Everyone knew it, and the Obama administration just planned to ride this out until the very end, and they did. The match rate was unsustainable because the woodwork effect was so expensive. And because the woodwork effect is so expensive, the woodwork effect means we're insuring people who already have insurance.
We pulled them out of the woodwork.
They were already doing it, but now
we're going to give them money.
Now we're going to give them money.
They used their own money before. Now we've put them on the
And because
the
of that massive exposure, it was unsustainable. That unsustainable amount is the federal government sitting there now finally adding up the dollars and cents saying we can't afford this. And that problem is what leads to this match rate problem. And I don't know, candidly, I don't know how they're going to fix it. Because you have enough states who've expanded, who've taken the money, and enough states that haven't, and everybody's kind of at loggerhead.
Jim, Dan just gave the best sort of fiscal conservative response for why this bill went down. But let's hear your comments. And as I pass it over to you, my biggest frustration is you got to have a bill that gets some Republican votes and some Democratic votes, or you don't have a good bill. It just tells me that you're not listening, that you're not responding to the diversity of ideas.
There's serious problems with Obamacare. We knew that. He had to negotiate so much with the pharmaceutical companies, with this group, with that one. There are serious problems. And what would have been amazing if Dan and I could have sat down and hammered out a deal, but Washington doesn't work that way. You know, it's all our way or it's the highway. Obamacare didn't have any Republican support, and if it had... If anybody would have voted for it, that would have been the end of their career. And it's the same way with Trump. Whereas maybe, if you want to look for a shining ray here, it may be Trump, and I've never seen anybody go after his own party faction the way he has. It may be that Trump is going to say, you know what? I'm never going to be there. I'm going to find me some blue dog Democrats, and we're going to sit down, and I can replace those votes, and they can go do it. And maybe we can actually take Obamacare, do the right thing, come up with a system that works for everybody. That's the optimistic side.
Yeah. And I thought it was optimistic when President Trump said, well, maybe I need to go talk to some Democrats. And he was sort of needling the Republicans. But that's exactly what you need to happen, because you need people from different life experiences to bring those ideas together and show more respect for people who have different opinions.
Just one other
In other words, compromise.
One other thing on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is...
Well, but that was the main complaint of the entire bill in the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Is there was no compromise.
Yeah.
No given
yeah, the Democrats are, you know, tainted on this. The Republicans are now tainted.
Speaker Ryan has said Obamacare is the law of the land, and it's not going away, and it's not. So now is the time for the governor to actually show some leadership, call the legislature in special session and say, you know what? It's going to be there. Our share is $747 million, and we're going to take it because it's not ending. So that whole argument is gone. That's what the governor ought to do. That's what the legislature ought to do. They ought to join Arizona and Colorado and New Mexico and Montana, for goodness sakes. And we ought to take our fair share, and we ought to do it right away, like tomorrow.
Mr. Attorney Dan McKay, what about the potential nuclear option with the Gorsuch Supreme Court nomination? The nuclear option, as I understand it, is you can
it just means you don't
get
take
rid
a
of the filibuster,
vote.
Right? Yeah.
Without getting too technical on how the Senate's policy works, you avoid a cloture vote, which means basically you don't need the 60 votes.
You can
to get
it with
over,
51,
and you can get it with 51. And the funny thing is, there has never been a cloture vote on a Supreme Court nominee. So this mantra that the Senate is doing something new by not having 60 votes, it's never been done. Now, that being said, even with Elena Kagan and even with Justice Sotomayor, the Republicans crossed over. They had plenty of votes. There was not a problem, right? But that's not the case.
Yeah.
See, because the shoe doesn't fit the same way. Senator Orrin Hatch had a great speech on the floor of the Senate this morning. And his comment was, look.
Why were you listening to Senator Hatch this morning?
I have a problem.
He is a policy wonk.
I have a problem.
You got a full-time job and, what is it, five or six children?
Hey, yes. I have a problem. This is a fair confession. But he talked about, oh, dang it, I'm busted. I've lost my point anyways. It was a really good one.
His speech
was just calling out the hypocrisy of the minority leader, Chuck Schumer, basically saying Chuck was, you know, I call him Chucky because we're buddies. No, Senator Schumer was just complaining or, you know, is now talking about, you know, this nuclear option and all these other things and castigating it when that's the way that Harry Reid did everything, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, you know, make it even better. It's never been used. This cloture vote has never been used on a Supreme Court pick. It's never been needed, though, because there's never been that much of a partisan issue. And three, finally, Senator Schumer was all about shutting down the government, all about, you know, using the nuclear option as a way to what's that called when we drag things out for no reason?
Filibuster,
right? It was all about it until they were in control, and then he never wanted the filibuster, and he castigated the Republicans for filibustering, and now here we are. It's time for a Republican first big vote in the Senate, and it's time for a filibuster.
Yeah, that's tough.
Great. It's sad, though, when
makes
that's really
me
the
glad
culture.
I'm glad that I work more at the state level than the federal level because we have so much more function in our state government than there is in the federal.
Oh, the irony.
It's because it's not
old,
that close.
Oh, the irony of the old one standing on the floor of the Senate and decrying the Democrats for playing games with a Supreme Court nominee and saying how childish and how foolish. When that Orrin Hatch led an unprecedented, we're not even giving you a hearing to a completely
a stolen seat.
Exactly. So don't be so sanctimonious, Orrin Hatch. Give me a break.
Jim, while you're on a roll, let's go to gripes because I know you got a good one.
I got a good one. Okay, I got a parking ticket. I may or may not have gotten it. I can't remember. So it's $15. I didn't get anything more until I got a letter from the city saying you owe $153. So I went in and I said, what is this about?
You did it in person. You just
I went in person. And they said, well, look, here's the deal. We sent you three notices, but they all came back. And I said, that address is from 7 years ago. Where did you get that? And they said, we get that from the Motor Vehicle Registration Department. And I said, why would you get it there? Why don't you get it with the driver's license department? Because that's up to date for everybody. It can't be any older than your driver's license. And they said, no, we don't do it that way. And I said, well, wait a minute. How did I get this letter from you saying I owe you $153? And they said, oh, well, Then we send
it
out.
Once it gets to 150.
Yeah, when it gets there, we send it out using the driver's license address. I said, that is the creepiest thing I have ever heard, Salt Lake City. I cannot believe that you don't use the same address all the time. Give me a break. I'm going to ask Representative McKay to carry a bill covering this in the next session.
He always puts his good ideas with Republicans.
Yeah, don't ask me to put a stop sign or carry a stop sign around. Remember that? We had a senator do that a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Dan, what is your gripe?
I need one.
Late March?
I paid that bill, by the way.
That whole monologue of Jim's, you couldn't think of a gripe.
I know. I tried so hard to find something to complain about. Okay. So here's my complaint. There are several good people in the state who could do lots of good things, and it would be very valuable to have a lot of them step up.
To help in public service.
For public service, mm-hmm. or supporting KCPW for the pledge.
There you go. Great way to end.
Yeah.
So the number is?
It is 801-359-5279 or kcpw.org.
That's great. Support public radio. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been joined by Jim DeBacchus, Dan McKay. Programs produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.